10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, and you are listening to the Ooze Luminous Edition with your host, Jason Sorrell, that's me, and Rotten Biohazard. Rotten, what's going on tonight,
man? Oh, I had not much, man. Everything's going pretty good, actually. How was your St. Paddy's Day?
St. Paddy's Day was crazy, just like we expected it to be. We decided to stay home, get drunk, and watch some St. Paddy's themed television programming. We ended up getting Leprechaun in the Hood was as close as we could get to something Irish themed. It was awful.
Dude, that is so, God. No.
Yeah, it was painful to watch. I understand they made the third one. We actually purchased both the first and second ones, and they made a third one. So we had a good time making fun of that. A lot of talk and everything else. Some good ideas kind of came of just bullshit with my friends that night. One was this coloring book thing. We hashed that out, my friends and I, what they thought that should be done and everything, and that was cool. And there was something else that that came with that discussion. And off the top of my head, I can't think of what it is, but maybe James in the chat room, she might remember what it is or what have you. But we get the show rolling and everything for tonight. Kind of did this last minute, jumped on, well, not last minute, the last few hours. I jumped on to the Ooze page and got behind the scenes for the folks who don't know what goes on Blog Talk Radio. I had to go ahead and schedule shows. So I started scheduling shows for both the Ooze Luminous Edition and the Ooze Outbreak Edition because I'm the co-host of both of those. So I was busy doing that, and I was busy uploading images onto the little image reel that people who listen to the show live or on the archive, they see. The images we had there before weren't formatted to size, basically. So the website either resized them, and I don't know if the images were the right size or not. So now the images we have in that image reel are two size. So, and I went through, and it wasn't just a matter of loading the images up, but every show, those images have to be loaded up individually. So I had to go through, and every show we have scheduled so far for the next month, I went through and uploaded those images individually. While I was doing the editing. TC had seems to have uploaded one image, and that image repeats. I'm kind of hesitant to go to some sort of, automated, it automatically happens by itself kind of thing. We kind of maybe need to have that option of, customizing each and every show with those ad reels.
Yeah.
Because of something we'll be talking about later on tonight, or we've got our second Ooze Radio commercial we'll be running tonight, the second ever. So what's been going on with you, man?
Oh, man, it's been just really kind of good week, off of school. Ended up picking up a bottle of Jim Beam for St. Paddy's Day. I haven't had Jim in maybe 5 years. So I have that half gone as of last night, and things have just been kind of slow, actually.
Right on. For St. Paddy's Day, we had a good Irish whiskey. I can't even think of that. James something. Now, off the top of my head, I can't even think of what it was.
James.
And one of the guys was here, Tim. Tim's, I'm always talking about Tim. Tim's got a bunch of my tattoos and everything else. Tim is Irish, from the Boston, Mass area, basically. And so he had this. He made this drink. He was calling Shillelaghs, and I don't know if it's if it's something he made up or something that he's actually been served before. But a Shillelagh basically is half Bailey's and half Jameson. It was pretty good, man. I enjoyed it. So that was the thing. And then this last week, I've been working on getting the adult coloring book all put together and finished, and the artwork's all formatted. It's all ready to go. The only thing I need to finish is I'm working on my about the artist blurb. I've got all the about each and every individual piece of artwork. I was able to come up with something to write about, but I can't think of any fucking thing to say about myself. And then I got to do the cover art, and I haven't decided what's going to be the cover art yet. And then the plan is to, just like pretty much anything, you send it out to the printers, the print proof, and that proof will change.
Dude, your phone's messing up, by the way, man.
What's messing up?
Your phone's messing up.
Hey, can you hear me now?
Yeah, it kept breaking in out there. Sorry about that.
Weird. Have you guys...
Yeah, still doing it. Is it me or is it
still
you?
Doing... Well, I don't know. I can hear you just fine. So I'm waiting for somebody in the chat room to confirm whether or not it's my phone or something else. And if necessary, I guess I can try to dial back in or what have you. So we'll wait on that confirmation from someone in the chat room. There's some people in there. I guess, am I still breaking up, man?
They're actually doing a lot better now than you were.
Okay. Again, I just got confirmation that it is me. Who knows what the fuck it is with the phone or whatever. I suppose I could try to Skype in, but I think that would be just worse.
We'll just blame a BTR. It's okay.
Yeah, it might be BTR too. So all the hiccups that have been going on. Jamie caught a couple of things tonight. Like the show was scheduled to start at 9:30 instead of 10 o'clock. That was my fault. And then of course I misspelled one of the tags. She caught that. So it wouldn't be a news radio broadcast without a few hiccups. So anyways, tonight's show topic, we're going to be talking about good and evil. And the question that I'd like to propose to our audience is there anything that you would consider an absolute good or an absolute evil? That regardless of circumstances, it consistently is what you would consider an act of evil or an act of good. So we'll start off with you, man. What do you think? Is there an absolute good or absolute evil?
Yes and no. I think a lot of that's based on perception. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, see, that's the thing. If it's based on perception, it's not absolute. So I would agree that it's relative. I would agree that it's based on perception. I'm of the opinion that there is not an absolute.
Okay, there's no absolute, but each of us would probably have something that we could say would be an absolute. You know, one way or the other, we have something in the back of our head that says, okay, this is an absolute evil, it's something that should never be done. That's
right,
kind of.
And I understand that on individual standards. Yes, that's the case. But what we're talking about, and just to make sure it's defined correctly, an absolute good or an absolute evil means that it's consistent, regardless of the time, regardless of the culture, regardless of the individual circumstances, that is either consistently right or wrong, good or evil. That if it changes based on one's individual standards, well, that's not absolute. That's a relative good or evil. Go ahead.
You can't take from that perspective either, man, because one culture's idea of what they consider to be a good act or a bad act is also really relative to the rest of the world. What we would consider to be a good act or a bad act, for instance, let's say the Middle East, you know, chopping people's heads off. That could be a bad thing. You know, it's all relative.
Right, and that's what I would say, that it is all relative. We may have our own individual standards. We may have lines as individuals which we refuse to cross, and there are acts which we consider, you know, an offense to us, an offense to our sensibilities, offense to our morals, offense to whatever it is we got going on, our philosophy, what our lives, whatever your standards are. But I would contend that there are no absolutes. As a matter of fact, when presented with, you know, any absolute that I've read about so far, I've always been able to shoot it down. I've always been able to spin it from, you know, from a cultural perspective or from the perspective of the era, what have you, which meant that the things we would consider just, you know, vile were by the people who were engaging those activities perfectly good. As a matter of fact, I find it difficult to find a person in history who ultimately was acting in a manner they considered evil, that even if they labeled it evil, they were doing it for their own benefit, they were doing it for their own good. And I guess that brings up another question that I'll throw out there. How do you define good and evil? How does one come to a definition of those things? That's funny, I posted an ad for the show for Blog Talk for the news on Facebook. And one of my friends, and this is some guy I knew for years, and we're not like good friends or anything else. This is just somebody that I've had contact with, and we've had some decent times together. He posts, you know, he responded to the ad with the following post. I'm going to just read this. There is defined good and evil. However, it is what we do with it that changes. or what we do with it that changes it. For instance, a child's murder is a horrific event. However, oftentimes we hear of people pulling together to protect future children from suffering as well. Mankind isn't perfect, but if we take our failings and address them as a community, then we can hope to strive for that baby step forward in our quest to become so. To me, evil is the absence of good. But even in the shade, we have the choice to make a change for good. The truest evil then would be apathy. If no change is made and evil be allowed to flourish, then nothing can salvage it. No positive can be gained, and those who close their eyes to it would be swallowed whole. So a good bit of very flowery language is what I read there.
That's a heavy post, man.
Right. Well, the problem is the dude dances around the topic. He never actually hits it on the head. He doesn't, he points out that evil is relative. He points out that there is no absolute because it's going to vary. He points out that there's contingencies, there's paradoxes, there's conflict in one's definition. One might say something is evil and then act in a way that opposes what that is. He's kind of saying that when he mentions, child murder and things like that. And then he goes on to say that the truest evil, in his opinion, is apathy. But why? Why is being apathetic, doing nothing, an evil? I would contend that it depends on the circumstances. And it depends on, your goals. What is it, if you're saying what you're, if apathy is evil, what are you apathetic towards? That makes it evil. By whose standard is apathy evil? So, and I challenged the guy, said basically, hey, call in, the show's at 10 o'clock, and give us your thoughts. But I know this dude, it's not likely he'll actually call in. The call-in number, by the way, for people who want to call in, since I'm mentioning, oh, crap. Hang on, still there, dude?
Yeah, I'm still here, man.
Okay, I just closed the studio page. So
nice.
The call-in number for people who want to call in is 347-989-1371, and we want to hear your thoughts. We want to know what you think. First of all, can you define it, nail it down? What is good and what is evil? What are your definitions? And then what, if any, would you consider, first of all, do you agree or do you have the feeling that there is an absolute good or evil, either side of the coin? And if so, what examples can you cite that are irrefutably, regardless of the culture context, regardless of the situation, either an absolute good or an absolute evil? So while we're waiting on folks to call in, and I've got both the chat room open and the studio open, so I'm bouncing back and forth. While we're waiting for folks to call in, how would you define good evil? Like, what do you use? What standards do you use personally?
Oh, personally, something that I consider an evil act, or, because, we're already pretty much shot down within 15 minutes. There's no such thing as an absolute good or evil. So are we going by personal standards now?
Well, I'm asking you how you define good or evil to you, because we both already stated that to us it's relative. So, relatively, what would you consider? What are your standards for good or evil? Or do you even have those standards? I mean, that's another option, I guess.
Well, I have different things I would consider an evil act, a good act. Well, that's also depends on the situation, depends on the day. But generally, the one thing I'm dead set against is molestation of children. Even though I can understand historical relevance within it as well.
Right, right. And that's the, not to make that argument, but that's the argument that's contended by, by people who are in favor of, I wouldn't say molestation, because these people don't probably believe that they're child molesters. What they do point out, though, is that there was a time in our culture when it was typical for 9-year-olds to be pregnant. It was typical for, 9-year-olds to be married.
Most kids didn't even have their period until way later.
Well, and see, in our culture, it was because people died so young also. I mean, when you're 30 years old, you're considered an old man back in the 1200s and 1100s. So it made sense that you got married young. There's other things going on there. And even back then, you read in the text that there would be a comment made by, if somebody was of certain age, and they're in their 30s, they're approaching that age, and they married a child. They hooked up with a child, and that would be, that was often frowned upon. And we got a caller. Let me go ahead and bring this caller on here, if they have anything to say. Let's see, 347, area code, you're on the use, it's on your brain.
Hey, what's up, man? Jason, it's Hops.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Hey, listen, okay, yeah, I just, you know, I catch your show all the time, man. All right, okay, I would put those two, good and evil, into, like, really simple, really quick things, quick, like, phrases. Good, for me, would be to make one's life, like, whether it's an animal, a human, whatever, easier, you know, in any kind of situation. It could be from helping the old lady take out her garbage to fucking, you know, going overseas and helping during an earthquake or even rescuing some animal, whatever. Whatever it is
okay.
to make, you know, one's life that much less harder, because life is fucking ridiculously hard as it is for anything. Making something's life that much easier, to me, would be considered good in
okay.
any situation. Evil would be making that whatever's life that much more harder. Like,
okay.
if, you know, someone's, like, on the street, okay, and, you know, he comes up to you, it could be from anything, like, you know, he comes up to you, he's like, listen, man, I'm down on my luck, blah, 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 you know, can I bum a dollar from you, and you fucking spit on the floor and be like, listen, asshole, go get a job, to, you know, someone who's basically trying to, you know, get up out of the chair, or a fucking animal that's all fucked up, and you pass by it and just leave it alone, you know, something that is in peril and not doing something about it, I would consider evil.
Yeah, I could definitely probably shoot down that one as well.
Yeah. Well, let me ask a couple questions. First of all, do you consider those examples absolutes? Like anything
that helps someone? Yeah, I would.
So let me pose a couple examples then. Anything
okay.
that helps make a person's life easier is good. So if
right.
there's a child molester and I help him get children to satisfy his needs, I'm making his life easier. Am I acting in a good manner?
Absolutely not. I'm not talking about like helping out a child molester. I'm talking about helping
okay.
out someone who's in need or who's in peril, like someone
okay.
who cannot do for themselves.
Steven, you gotta be more specific
so,
here, man. We could definitely shoot examples at you that would basically screw your whole ideology up.
Something that is suffering or yeah.
Go ahead, dude.
Sorry, no,
go
yeah,
ahead,
I was just saying like something that was, you know, suffering or something that isn't like need, something that, you know, common sense wise would be like, you know, hey, let me go help that whatever it is, you know, let me go help that, you know, person who, you know, cannot do for themselves, you know, and sacrifice, I would say, like a little bit of my time to help whatever it is, you know, that cannot do for themselves. So, like,
not to totally trash your idea, because where you're coming from, basically. But when you sit there and say anything that alleviates suffering, well, suffering is a relative concept. And whose suffering are you alleviating? Again, I bring you back to the example of the child molester who needs his sexual gratification. He's suffering because he can't get it. Or let me give you another example. During World War II, the Nazis are flying over into England or whatever. If I provided intelligence to Nazi Germany of what weapon sites to hit, if I was able to help them cripple the English war machine, well, I would have saved thousands of German lives by preventing England from being able to wage war against Germany. In the right historical context, you know, had Germany won the war, I would have been considered a hero if that were the case. So you had to be kind of careful about considering that thing that an absolute. I see what you're describing as relative, because the suffering you're alleviating, like the example you gave, you know, instead of ignoring some bum on the street who's hungry and begging for money, begging for change, I give him some of my money. And then later down the road, I don't have that extra dollar to feed my kids. You know,
right.
Was my act an act of good, an act of kindness, or an act of evil because I set myself up to suffer later down the road?
Well, I mean,
so,
well, all right, go ahead. No, I would say, you know, if you're gonna go over there, you know, and like help that person, okay, and you're giving him your last dollar, you know, it's obvious, you know, as parent that like, you know, you yourself can't afford, so it's obvious that you yourself is suffering. You know what I'm saying? By giving,
okay,
like, I'm talking about someone who, like, say the bum, okay, or the homeless
uh-huh.
person, okay, you know, they, a person who would do, who like, okay, for example, the person who walks to work, goes into Manhattan every day, walks to work, and there's a dude sitting on the side of the street that hasn't got a fucking shoe on, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they pass by him every time. You know, whatever, instead of just taking a dime out of your pocket. Shit, if you find a quarter on the floor, drop it in his hat, you know?
Okay.
If you want to put it like that, anything of charitable.
Let me pause it another idea then.
Okay,
so you're walking down the street, and you see an animal in a trap, okay? Is it good to free that animal from the trap?
Jason?
Bob, you there, man?
Yeah, man.
No,
I lost you.
Okay,
is it good if you're walking down the street and you see an animal in a trap, it's suffering, is it good to free that animal from a trap?
It all depends on what kind of animal.
It's a dog. It's a puppy. It's a kitten. It's a fucking kitten. It's a harmless
yeah,
little kitten,
yeah, of
a
course,
house cat.
Of course.
Let's follow this line of logic then. So the animal, you're going to release this animal from the trap, and that's good. If the animal's wounds from the trap are so grievous that it's going to die, and all it's going to do is suffer a long, slow, painful death,
yep,
is, it
a very
to,
bad act.
Is it better to kill the animal or to let it live?
Put a bullet
in. Well, I mean, you can't put it in black and white like that because
yes, you can.
That's the thing. Now, real quick, hang on a second. Because what you're doing is you are kind of putting in black and white. A charitable act to someone who's suffering based on, you know, whatever standards that is, that's good. What I'm pointing out here, I guess I'm asking the question, if the animal is going to suffer, if it suffer over a period of time because of its wounds, is it better to let it live? Is that the good, or is it better to kill it?
Well, neither. Because I'm not an expert. I would seek other kind of help.
So you're saying you wouldn't kill the animal, you would take the animal to an expert. So let me suggest that you walk by a homeless person, somebody who is starving in the streets, who wants, you know, your change. You see them every day. So they're not dying from starvation because they're obviously
right.
there every day. They're obviously able to get enough to sustain themselves every day. So when you give this person a dollar, is it good to give him the dollar and help him out? Or is it good to ignore him and encourage other people to ignore him so that eventually he gets up and finds another way to sustain himself versus relying on the charity of others? Because I would see that as an evil, to perpetuate that person's situation. Here's a dollar, stay poor. Here's a dollar, stay poor. Here's a dollar,
right.
stay poor. I see every day, and every day I walk past you, I get to feel good about myself, about handing you that dollar. But when I see that going on with somebody else, I consider that an evil. All you're doing is telling that person you have no reason to go out and do for yourself, or you're doing the very minimum for yourself instead of trying to do whatever you could be doing to better yourself. You know, and I understand these people don't have a lot of opportunities, but, you know, having lived all over this country, having lived in all these places, this guy doesn't have to go to New York. He's got a couple of feet. If he can walk to the spot where he's begging for money, he can walk someplace where food is readily available. He can walk someplace where there's shelter. He can walk away from that situation. So whoever, you know, he's holding out for a management position at some place in New York City or something like that, I don't know. I don't know what his story is. But I would say that handing him that dollar every day is keeping him in that trap versus releasing it.
Right, but you got to also remember what put him in that trap in the first place. Like,
what should that,
you know,
what should
like
that matter?
Like you said, you don't know his story. And, yeah, you're absolutely right. By giving him that dollar,
okay, your point is, since I don't know what put him in that trap, I can't make a judgment call on what's going on. If he's in a trap, he's in a trap. If he's in a perpetual situation where he's going to continuously be in harm's way, he's begging for money on the street, he's perpetually in that situation. Does it matter how he got there? Or does it matter? The question is, am I helping him by handing him the dollar, or would I be doing him more good by holding that money for myself? You know, if I want to give money to this guy, if I want to help his situation, maybe I give it to some organization or something like that. But my point is, If he's in that trap, he's in that cycle where he has to come beg for money every day for his sustenance, aren't I doing more harm? Isn't that an evil? And if that's the case, if I can see it that way, can you call that kind of charity, helping somebody who's suffering in that way, a good? Because it doesn't sound absolute to me.
If you think outside you're absolutely right. It is a form of, I guess, of evil by keeping them in there. But you could also, use your brain and keep them out, put it outside the trap, put it outside the box. With that dollar, with that dollar that you handed him, you can hand him a fucking application to CVS. With that dollar, you can also give him the address to shelter. With that dollar, you can do a lot more. See what I'm saying?
Right.
And by you giving your part, you're doing good. You see what I'm saying? You don't have to exactly hand the dollar, listen, pal, good luck.
We're doing good based on your opinions.
I don't want the show
to run into the social dynamics of charity and what have you, because we're really talking about good and evil, which are more ambiguous ideas. So if we get bogged down in specifics, that's going to kind of derail the show. But so I understand your point that from your perspective, it may be good to hand that person a dollar. Charity might be good. I disagree because I see things differently. But then what that illustrates is that the good you're suggesting isn't absolute. It's relative.
Right.
So, and again, and I understand your standards. I asked Rod what his standards were. His standards are different than my standards, and that's kind of, I guess, the point, that it's almost always going to be relative, that it's going to be almost impossible to point to something and say it's an absolute good or evil.
Okay. All right. No, agree to disagree to that. Listen, all right. Before I go, Jason, listen, real quick, this is completely off subject.
Okay.
All right. I'm actually in the middle of switching careers, man. I'm leaving my entomological career to pursue tattoo arts, man. And when I was younger, I had a mentor and stuff that kind of kicked the bucket on me, which was really, really horrible. And ergo, I got into pest control and then entomology, and then I went to college and whatever. All right. But now it's just, I'm kind of just like done with it. And I want to go back to tattooing. Is there any kind of like tip you can throw me or anything like that as far as that's concerned?
Are you married or do you have kids?
No, completely single, man.
Do you have any money?
Yeah, I have money.
Okay. My suggestion would be build up a really good portfolio of tattoo artwork. And keep in mind there's a distinction between tattoo artwork and regular artwork. You want to show that you understand tattoo design. And you want your book of artwork to be presented as professionally as possible. So you want to actually get like a hardcover, spiral-bound drawing book, not lined paper or anything like that, that you're drawing in, you're sketching in, and you want to draw as much as possible so that when you go to a tattoo shop and say you're looking at, you want to get into an apprenticeship, and they're going to want you to pay, but they're going to want to see that you have some knowledge about tattooing, that you understand tattoo design, because what they're really going to be teaching you is tattoo technique and tattoo safety at the shop. Okay, so
you have to
show up with the talent.
Yeah,
I'm
in an apprenticeship right now, and
you're in an apprenticeship right now. Well, then you're on your way.
He's all he's doing right now is basically making me take a pen to a newspaper. So, I can draw and I the difference between tattoo art, the tattoo art and actual artwork is completely different. I understand all that, But is there is that going in the right direction? Is he like sending me in the right direction? You would know with a man of your experience.
What's he having you apply to newsprint? You said a pen. Is it like an ink pen, or is he having you use a tattoo machine, or what is he doing?
Well, he's making me use like a ballpoint regular big pen.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other tattoo artists tonight, he actually set me up with a machine he doesn't use anymore and a metal grip, you know, for a mag. And, you know, he set me up like that. And he's like, okay, yeah, listen. He goes, you know, don't, because I was bending my wrist. And he's like, yeah, don't bend your wrist, you know. Use your elbow, mm-hmm. you know, twist from your elbow. And he's like, you know, make sure you keep the needles. Like, you know, if you were going to do like a shaving, he goes, make sure, you know, the needles are always up against the mag tip, I would say, because mm-hmm. it, like, vibrates, it, like, does something to the skin. You know, it's just a lot of information and stuff. But the other, actual mentor is just having me trace stuff on newspaper, man. I'm just like, okay.
Well, a ballpoint pen is about the size, the line laid down by the right ballpoint pen is about the size of the line you're going to lay down with a tattoo needle, like with an 8-round or a 5-round, that's about roughly the size that you're going to be laying down. That hand control is going to be important. I would, you know, I would think putting a ballpoint pen in a steel metal grip, you know, taking the needle well out and running a ballpoint pen, because it would give you more weight, because you also have to develop that arm strength and that use of holding that tattoo needle. My first advice would be, you do not want to go faster than your mentor's pace. In other words, you know, you're going through the apprenticeship program that he has set up for you, and keep in mind, part of the apprenticeship program is a matter of endurance. He wants to see how bad you want to be a tattoo artist, because only if you want to be a tattoo artist bad enough, only if you're willing to go at that slow, agonizing, monotonous pace, is it going to be finally, he's going to go, okay, it's worth me divulging my whatever to this guy to make him a tattoo artist, because eventually he's going to sign off on you being an artist, and then you're going to be his competition. Okay, so you have to make sure that you want it.
It's worth it. It's worth it, man. Right. I mean, you know, I'm in it. I'm in it for, you know, I'm in it to win it, man. But
do you have your own tattoo equipment? Like, do you have your own tattoo setup at your home?
No.
Okay. Well, this is what I was going to suggest: is that if you want to do something on your own on the side and have your own tattoo equipment, there's nothing preventing you from setting up your tattoo equipment at home and getting pig skin at a meat market and practicing on pig skin. It's as close to human skin as you'll actually get. The only downside to doing that at home without your mentor being there is he's not going to have the opportunity to watch you do it and point out where you're making mistakes. So you might be practicing a bad technique for months at home, and then you go to your mentor, and he's going to tell you you're doing it wrong. Okay,
yeah,
so that'd be the only downside. But if you're in an apprenticeship program already, you've got, you know, an idea of what goes on with tattoo design, read as many books and websites and everything else as you can about, you know, cross-contamination, tattoo technique. I would check out, if you're really interested, because the book's like $250, I would check out a book by Guy Aitchison called Reinventing the Tattoo.
Okay. Hold on.
Guy Aitchison, A-T-C-H-I-N-S-O-N, I believe.
I think so. It's Aitchison or Aitchison. I was thinking A-I-T-I. I don't know. Reinventing the Tattoo is the title of the book. And check him out. A lot of biomechanical, a lot of really just, you know, mind-blowing stuff that doesn't rely on black lines to define the artwork and everything. That would be something to check out, but I mean, really, if you're in an apprenticeship and you're in that program and you're in a shop where not only is your mentor teaching you things, but you've got other artists stepping up and teaching you things too, it sounds like you're in an ideal situation.
All right. Thank you. That's
all right. And
can I find that book on Amazon or like eBay or something?
Oh, yeah, sure, man.
You might be able to buy the old one on Amazon or eBay or what have you, but he's got a new edition he just released. And I think you can only get that through his website. Check that out if you could, and it's like I said, it's like $250 for the book, but it's like a book and CDs and the whole deal, and just an amazing amount of information. So we're gonna go ahead and thanks for calling in, Hobbs. We're gonna run our new ad for the evening, and here we go.
All right, man, take it.
Hey, Ooze fans. Jason Sorrell here, co-host of the Ooze Luminous and Outbreak Editions. I wanted to call your attention to the image at the top of the page featuring the Ooze logo, a Sin image, Creative Body Studios logo, and some other ads we've got running there. This space is available on a limited basis to people who want to reach our audience. And if you haven't noticed this image before, you do now, because let's face it, people are generally good little sheep. So every time they hear this ad, whether it's in the live broadcast or the archives, they're going to go look at that image and they're going to see your image if it's up there. Now, your image or your message to our audience could be anything. It could be about a website, a project you're undertaking, a product you're offering our audience, a special event you have upcoming in the future, or a message to a special someone that you know will be listening to the U's. And there are lots of folks listening to the U's, both the live broadcast and the audio archive. So if you'd like to see your image up there in that space, it could be up there seen 4 times a week at a really terrific rate. And keep in mind that certain limitations do apply. Your ad could be ran during our 4 shows at 4 times a week for up to an hour, sometimes 2 hours every show. Your ad will be repeated with the other 5 ads that are up there at $5 for a week block, or if you want it for a full month, we'll do a full month for $10 for that block. Or if you want to go a whole year, you can get a whole year's worth of advertising, your ad being repeated, this image up there at the top of our page, during the news broadcast and while people are listening to the archives, for $50 a year. So if you have a message that you want to reach our audience, well, I think that's a really great price. Now keep in mind, certain limitations do apply. There's image size restrictions, content restrictions, and there's only a limited amount of space and a limited amount of time that your ad can be ran. If you want to get a hold of me for details, my name is Jason Sorrell, and you can reach me at my email address, sorrellart@hotmail.com. That is S-O-R-R-E-L-L-A-R-T @hotmail.com. Go ahead and shoot me an email to get the details and talk about what it is you want put up there. We'll go ahead and hash all those details out and get your ad up there, and you'll be speaking to the U's audience through that image block that's up there at the top of our page. This is Jason Sorrell for U's, and I'm out.
Creative Oddity Studios.
Creative Oddity Studios. Stickers, t-shirts, skateboard decks, lighters, prints, posters, and many other fine pieces of merchandise.
It's some of the best damn artwork you'll find on the internet.
The creative assault and meandering of Jason Sorrell, T.C. Downey, and Vanessa Lee.
Coleman! What is best in life?
To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to visit Creative Oddity Studios.
Bondage art, digital manipulation, erotica, demon girls, fantasy, tattoo art, horror, occult, and we dare to call it artwork.
It's like candy, but for your eyes!
Check out our very popular books on the occult and Satanism, now available in hard copy and downloadable format.
Hoo-wah!
Check out our blogs on art, tattoo work, what life is like as a tattoo artist, social issues, philosophy, lowbrow culture in Austin, Texas, and eminentmind.info. You'll enjoy them.
If you can read!
Creative Oddities Studios, www.creativeoddities.com.
I like the naked girls.
Creative Oddities Studios.
All right, the call-in number is 347-989-1371. We are talking about good and evil, and the question we're asking is, how do you define good and evil, if you have a definition for good and evil, and do you believe or do you think that there is an absolute good or an absolute evil?
You know, man, so, from everything Hobbes was saying, you know, during his whole long spiel, he's saying he wants to leave a job in pest control to tattoo. Now, by his own definitions of good and evil, him leaving pest control could mean that a little girl is going to wake up in the morning with a toe missing due to a rat, because he wasn't there to kill it. See? He screwed up, that's all I have to say.
Well, I think what he was saying is, and I think this is the... not that Hobbes hasn't given this some thought, but the knee-jerk reaction is, you know, oh, if you help alleviate somebody's suffering, well, then that's a good thing. That person that's on life support, you know, they're dying from disease, they're on life support and everything else. Is it good to yank the plug, or is it good to leave them plugged in? You know, which way are you alleviating suffering? You know, is it letting them live and have that potential where they could be suffering for years, or they could wake up from that coma at any moment, or pulling the plug and letting them die? Which is it? And it's a moral dilemma. And that's where, you know, again, it becomes relative. You know, it's a matter of your own personal values. It's a matter of your own personal opinions, what experiences you've had and what have you, and how all that comes together and coalesces within you that guide you towards one or the other being defined as good or evil, which is why I tend to try to avoid those definitions. I kind of define or look at good and evil as not so much, you know, good or evil, but either to my benefit or not to my benefit. And I recognize that it's a very personal thing. You know, it may be to my benefit to hand that person the dollar that morning because I want to feel good about myself for handing out that money. But I realize that, you know, I'm giving that dollar. I don't know who this person is. That dollar in my pocket, I'm not going to miss it or I wouldn't give it to them. Okay? And so it's all about me feeling good if I hand them that dollar. And if
then
I don't feel like, you know, and if I don't feel good about it, then I'm not going to hand them the money.
Then the
so,
idea of,
you know,
then, oh, sorry, go ahead, Ben.
Go ahead, dude. No,
then the whole, idea of Hobbs trying to say, you know, hand the guy a dollar and hand him, you know, a job application or something like that, it really struck me, well, not so much funny, but instantly, the old Chinese proverb of give a man a fish, he eats for a day. Teach a man to fish, he fishes for a lifetime. That, for some reason, that kind of popped in my head, and I have no idea why.
Right, right. And if, well, and if you're handing somebody, you know, like I said when I was talking to Hobbs, you're perpetuating the situation by not teaching them how to fish. And you know, but can you actually? Because I've, you know, we had our show about transients and everything else. You try it. Walk up to a transient on the street one day and go, hey, how about instead of me giving you a dollar, how about I go and take you to where I work and I'm gonna show you how to do my job, and you're gonna fill out an application and everything else, and we're gonna put you to work. How about we do that today? He'll tell you no. 9 times out of 10, he'll tell you no. He is far more content and probably far more profitable standing there on the corner most days and collecting money from passerbys who get a little bit of sympathetic about it. When I've seen transients walking around here, and again, we're going off topic, but when I've seen transients walking around here, they're not necessarily out on the street for 8 hours a day. They're out on the street for a few hours until they've gotten whatever it is they need to get, and then they're done for the day. You know, they go off and, you know, who knows, get into a stupor or, you know, they might be hard at work, you know, filling out applications at the local, you know, workforce management place. I don't know. I'm not going to say one way or the other. But, you know, going out and working a full-time job, for whatever reason, they've made a choice that it's more to their benefit. It's more to their personal good to be on the street begging for money and living off the charity of others than it is to go out and actually have a job.
Yeah.
So, but I understand Hobbs' point. I understand what he's saying, and I understand that. It, for me, the only bone of contention I have with Hobbs is that his version of good is not absolute. And, of course, that's one of the dangers in defining an absolute good or an absolute evil, is that you often fail to recognize that it's good based on your standards. It's good based on your sensibilities, or it's evil based on your sensibilities, your moral compass, and it may not apply. You know, I point to Nazi Germany, because if you look at Nazi Germany, this is the great evil of our times was Nazi Germany and what they did. You know, had they won the war, history would be different. Had they won the war, you know, history would hail them as heroes for having, you know, united Europe and having, you know, eviscerated a racial plague in their, you know, their opinion, their terms. Okay, I'm not advocating what they did. I'm just suggesting that had they actually won the war, then our perspective on that evil would be very, very different than it is today.
Same thing could be said for, let's see what our countries could think about. Middle East could be said for right now in modern times. That's the more recent one anyways.
Sure.
But see, hence,
well, sure.
Dude, if Nazi Germany got rid of all the Jews, we would have a lot less accountants these days. Our money system would be shit. Just putting it out there, of course.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. But all right. but your point about the Middle East, I'm almost certain that there are pockets of communities who are, you know, they're hardworking, generally morally upright based on their religious standards, that they have no intention of going out and harming anyone or putting themselves in harm's way. They just want to go out, do their jobs, you know, herd their cattle, work their phones, whatever it is they do. They want to do that and be left the fuck alone. But I bet there's good pockets of them that looked at what happened on 9/11 and looked at, you know, it was a blow against evil imperialism. It was a blow against an immoral and corrupt culture. and that those people on those planes were heroes. You know that Osama bin Laden, you know, who was, you know, enemy number one here in the United States for years. You know, we, you know, he was an evil man. They talked about him. You know, he planned acts of evil and acts of terrorism. He, in his, in these other countries, he's a hero. He is a godsend. So it, again, it's a matter of perspective. And the ugly thing about all this is how easily these things are spun by our individual governments, by our media machines and everything else. We are meant to consider Osama bin Laden evil. And I'm not saying that, you know, he was out to for my benefit. In my opinion, he would probably look at me and look at the way I live and look at what I do, and he would be my enemy. But it's one thing to have an enemy. It's one thing to have a person who opposes you and your lifestyle and your philosophy and the way you do things. It's another thing to turn around and label him based on your moral compass and saying he was evil.
I agree. That's exactly right. I mean, even many cultures, they all have these ideas of what's good and evil, based whether it's based on a biblical text, for instance, the Quran in the Middle East, or here we have, you know, have a good old, you know, good old Bible, man. Same damn thing, just spun in a different direction.
And not a very far different direction. Not like the opposite direction either. That's
no,
what's,
not even,
I
man.
I think it's what
interesting.
Yeah, that.
Because basically, if you, for instance, in our Bibles, you have the red text, which was, you know, Christ in, you know, the certain you know, Bibles here in the States. The most quoted prophet in the Quran was Christ. Wasn't Muhammad. It was Christ.
And you look at the, you know, the rules, the that idea that you you kill the infidel, you kill the person who is not obedient to God, that you either convert or die. That's not a purely Muslim concept. That
no,
is a core ideal or core concept that runs through all three Abrahamic religions. So Judaism, Christianity, and Islam all have that thread where you kill the non-believer. And Christianity is replete with it. You know, killing witches, you know, whatever, for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, poisoners or actual predictors of pagan religion, whatever, going after the infidels in the East, going after the Moors, the Muslims, basically. All of that was, you know, perfectly all right, despite their commandment of thou shalt not kill. And despite, you know, this idea that that Jesus was a man of peace, you know, Jesus himself said, I come to bring the sword. And you have to question, you know, you have to question what is evil. And if you, in their religion, you can tell that even there it's convoluted. I think it's like, I don't know which book it is, starts with an I, Isaiah or something like that. And it's, I don't know which actual the phrase is, but, their Bible quotes their God as saying, that he lives in darkness. He dwells in darkness, that he brings both good and evil. You know, he brings all things. So he's the source of all things. So no wonder the idea of good and evil is so convoluted in our society.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, from the whole premise of good and evil was done by an occultist, Zoroaster, back in the Middle East.
Right. Well, yeah, Zoroaster was reacting to monotheism and created this idea that you have a perfect and loving God versus an absolutely evil deity. And The Judaism wrestled with this while they were, you know, in Babylon, in exile. They questioned how the chosen people could lose their temple, how the chosen people could be uprooted. So they began to question the, you know, the absolute good of their God. They wanted to believe that they're in their monotheism, that their God was, you know, in perfect love and perfectly just and, you know, dealt with them in a fair way. And then the Babylonians came and kicked their asses. And it's like, how does this happen? If the God of all things is on your side, how does this happen? So then they began to suggest, well, maybe there's an interloper. Maybe there is an evil. The story of Job gets written during this period of time, where they talk about, you know, they introduce the devil as a tempter, a tester, one who questions the will and the way of things. And the story of Job basically is an allegory of them resolving their issue with monotheism, that regardless of the temptations and everything else, regardless of the, you know, the divine edicts of their God, you know, that Job was tested by this devil with their God's permission to do so and remained faithful, and that the rewards of faith are better to a monotheistic God than you know, going with another God or going with a quick fix or what have you. That was the lesson of Job, according to the Judaism, you know, Judaistic faith. And that's the way they wrestled with it. And Zoroaster, I think, rose up a little bit from that, which, of course, Zoroasterism is then, was the probably the one of the earliest incarnations of the modern Christian religion.
I always thought he was more of an occultist, less of the religious type.
Well, it's with the occultist, occultism has always been, in my mind, the science of, the practice of. So you have the practice did as an occultist, and then you have the philosophy behind his practice. So a lot of the philosophy that Zoroaster espoused, a lot of the allegories he used end up getting incorporated into Christianity. Much of what Jesus is quoted as saying comes directly from Zoroasterism.
Yeah, we definitely stole a lot from the Middle East in order to hate us.
Right. Well, was it algebra? Did algebra come from the Middle East, or was it all the way from India?
Oh, shit. Well, I know that they weren't corn-fed middle of America people.
Right. I know that. I want to say that in the Middle East gave us algebra and more advanced medicine. That a lot of what was lost in ancient Greece was retained by the Middle East, because the ancient Greeks were getting into higher math and things of that nature, and medicine. Definitely with medicine, they were getting into different ideas. So I want to say that India gave us the concept of zero. The idea of a null set being represented by a number didn't exist until it was conceived of in India.
I actually did not know that. It's quite interesting, actually.
Right.
I think we got astronomy from Egypt. I think that was the first set of astronomy basically was done in Egypt first. I'm trying to think, am I right in there or not?
Well, I think, the Egyptians said, astrology came from a number of different sources. Egypt definitely perpetuated a lot of the astrology, a lot of what we have is familiar astrology. They knew about stars and everything else. Excuse me. If you're looking at ancient cultures, the Dagon tribes, D-A-G-A-N tribe of Africa, which they're, I believe they're in the north, they worshipped the star Sirius. And their understanding of not only, how the stars and planets move, but where the Earth was relative to stars and planets was ridiculously accurate for people that had no, telescopes. They had no technology of that kind. They just knew where these things were. So, I would say that our modern astronomy probably was rooted in what those people had to teach local cultures, and of course, the local cultures like the Egyptians and things like that blurred it into astronomy or astrology. But I know that the pyramids of Giza are aligned a certain way with the poles and certain stars and what have you. Yeah, it's all ridiculous. It's all it's all heavy stuff. Maybe for another show. But the point being that our moral background comes from this wrestling with the concept of good and evil, that monotheism, the monotheism of the Jews, did not properly address good and evil, because it's troubling when you're a nomadic tribe, and we're talking about Moses wandering the desert for 40 years or whatever. Have you seen the movie Dune?
Of course. Why?
Okay, so in the movie Dune, you got these people that live on a desert planet. And Frank Herbert, who wrote that book, he was almost directly referring to the Jewish exile from Egypt into the desert. They're wandering for 40 years. 40 years in the desert, what you're doing, what your leadership is doing there, is making sure that you are totally devout and totally zealous about your one God, and that you're a hardened, warlike tribe. Your nomads have been living in the desert for years, so that when you finally return to civilization, you're ready to kick some ass. Dune illustrates that point perfectly. You've got this culture that resides in this desert planet. They become equals to, if not superior to, the emperor's chosen, they're his most hardy warriors. So that same mentality is going on. Plus, you stay in the desert for 40 years to make sure that any of the generation that lived under Egyptian rule, because a lot of the Jews, when they were in Egypt, adopted Egyptian ways, were practically Egyptian themselves. So any of those people that held, you know, held true to the old gods of Egypt or understood Egyptian philosophy or Egyptian mannerisms, what civilization was in Egypt, died out while wandering the desert. So when you finally eliminated all those people that had all those Egyptian ideas and Egyptian blood and Egyptian things going on, then you take this hardened tribe of Jewish nomads and you go sack this city or whatever, and then you establish monotheism. And for years, monotheism becomes the answer. Good and evil is not necessary. Good is anything that's in the will of God, basically. So if God says it's right, then it's right. And you assume that anything that happens, whether it's famine, whether it's an earthquake, whatever the fuck it happens, it has to be by the will of God and therefore good. Is it the way they look at things? But when the chosen people get uprooted from Egypt by the Babylonians, all of a sudden, oh shit, how can our God be purely good if he allows this evil to fall us? Because we didn't do anything. We were, you know, we kept the covenant, so what happened? And that's how this concept of evil being personified, that's how this concept of evil came becoming personified, that's really, you know, how it came about. And then, of course, it took root. And, I mean, even Islam has, you know, this idea of an evil. Somebody's posting in the chat room, there's no solid evidence of the Jews even being in Egypt. And I totally agree with that. The story could have been completely fabricated by Moses to a bunch of people who wandered around the desert. And basically they're trying to explain what happened to them, the reason they have to go back and kick civilization's ass. Here's the reason they hate civilization. We were kicked out of civilization. You see those great big pyramids in the distance? We used to live there. We helped build those things. And I've always contended that that in Egypt, these people were meticulous record keepers. You know, they kept track of, you know, especially during the building of the pyramids, how many workers were there, how many, you know, bushels of grain were used to feed the workers and everything else. They kept track of this shit, and they kept stone fucking records, so the stuff stood the test of time, you know. When the pharaoh was talking about the glory of building his pyramid, he wanted you to see that, you know, millions of tons of wheat went to feed the slaves that built the pyramids, and not once was it mentioned that these Egyptian Jews in mass revolted against this pharaoh and left. Now, once in Egyptian history are plagues mentioned, where the firstborn son of every person in the city is killed or anything. None of that shit is mentioned. And we're going to have to roll out here pretty quick. I always thought it was funny that, you know, if this Egyptian king's army had been wiped out, this is Ramses III, whose reign in Egypt was longer than any other pharaoh before him. He reigned for fucking ever, basically. If his army had been wiped out, his enemies would have been on him immediately, and Ramses' reign wouldn't have lasted so long. So that's an argument against the Jews even being in Egypt. So do you got anything else real quick before we run the outro?
No, I actually came up with another show topic. Let's do a show on zombies.
Do a show on zombies?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. We'll get that scheduled. A show on zombies to come next week. We're going to be talking about progress, how you define it, what it is, and if we're doing it right or not. So we're out. Later.
All right, man. Later.